Welcome to Building with Brick, foundational wisdom on coaching, careers, and Christ. This leadership podcast was spawned by Coach Brickner's book, So You Want to Be a Coach, which is the story of a corporate executive who made a drastic career change and became a head men's basketball coach. Dr. Brickner's book is available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook on Amazon.com or go to his website, www.drjoebrickner.com. That's drjoebrickner.com.
While you're at it, check out Dr. Brickner's new book, America Lost in Place. You can get it in paperback, hardback, ebook, or audiobook on Amazon.com, or just go to Dr. Brickner's website.
Now, here's this week's podcast.
Welcome to Building with Brick, foundational wisdom on coaching, careers, and Christ. It's good to be back with you all. It's been a while since I've had a podcast. I was finishing up the second book that I wrote called America Lost in Place. And it's just great to be back and have an opportunity to talk about some things that I think a lot of folks are wondering about. How does this work or whatever as far as college athletics is concerned? And those two topics that I want to talk about today would be the transfer portal, where athletes can put their name into basically a pool and be able to transfer and not have to sit out a year as they used to have to do. And then the second thing is name, image, and likeness program, which allows athletes to get paid. And my understanding is not by the university, but by anyone who wants to use their name, image, or likeness. We've got with us today somebody who knows what's going on, Chuck Smert. Chuck is a consultant for the NCAA. He has a tremendous resume. He spent 17 years in the NCAA Enforcement Division. And we'll talk hopefully a little bit later about some of the different investigations he got involved with. I think the biggest one may have been the SMU deal where they eliminated football for a year or two or three or whatever. But after the NCAA moved from Kansas City to Indianapolis, Chuck chose not to move with them, and instead started his own consulting business, and it's called the Compliance Group, TCG. That was 1999, and he's been going strong ever since. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Joe. It's great to be on the best podcast in America, so it's good to be here.
O'Connor probably told you that, right? Because he was one of the stars. A friend of ours, Bill O'Connor, was the head basketball coach at Rockhurst University, and he was on one of our podcasts earlier in the year. Just a funny man, a lot of stories. Don't tell him this, but he's a good man. Don't tell him I said that. He's a good man, just like you are, Chuck. Chuck, before we get into the topics themselves, the two topics I want to talk about, tell us a little bit more about your background, you know, and why you decided not to move with the NCAA, because you had a really good position with them, and you were in charge, I think, of their infractions committee and did a lot of investigation. So give us a little more background, if you would.
The short answer of why I didn't move, because my wife said we weren't moving, but that's the short answer. But since I know this is many ways a basketball audience, I wanted to briefly touch upon, I grew up in a small farming town in Indiana. There were 1,100 in this town. They looked at our gym for Hoosiers and thought it was just a little too big. And my high school coach is more infamous than famous in Indiana high school coaching circles. But he was a consultant or an advisor to the movie. So think about Hoosiers, and that was our town growing up. Wow. We had, you know, they decorated the bus for some of our away games and things like that. So basketball was king in that town, although I played football and basketball and was fortunate enough then to go to Indiana. And my first year at IU was Knight's first year as the head basketball coach.
Oh. So
you've all seen Assembly Hall, you know, the famous Assembly Hall. the first game in Assembly Hall, IU beat Digger Phelps and Notre Dame 80-39.
Whoa.
And so that was the first game played in that. So anyway, so I went to IU and I played football there, and I played for 2 years for a guy named Pont, and then 2 years for a guy named Corso. Lee Corso. If we have time, I can tell you a bunch of Corso stories. But anyway, so I went there, got my undergraduate and my master's in public administration. So I was going to be a mayor. I was going to be a city manager or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Got involved with transportation safety investigations during my second year of grad school, worked for DOT doing safety investigations. So I went a different path, went out to Richmond, Virginia, then took a job in Richmond doing motor vehicle reconstruction. And we just started getting into plane and train investigations, accident investigations. Uh-huh. So a friend of mine worked at the NCAA, a person I knew from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
He said, we have an opening for an investigator. And being from a small town, I'd never traveled the country. And the NCAA investigators, you're on the road about every other week. Uh-huh. And so I thought, I'll give it 2 years. I loved Richmond. I loved that field. I thought, I'll go give back to athletics what it gave me, which was a chance to go to, I probably wouldn't have gone to college, but for my scholarship.
Yep.
So yep. I had a chance to give back. I told the NCAA, I'm coming for 2 years and then I'm going back to Richmond. I stayed 17 and a half years. So. But I was fortunate during that time that during the last about 8 years, I coordinated all the major investigations. I had a few myself, but I coordinated all of them in the sense of I was supposed to know the status. The directors were supposed to come to me and talk to me about where we were on all these cases. So in 99, the NCAA declares it's going to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
So. My mother's still in Indiana. She's happy. You know, my prodigal son is coming home. So my wife and I, and my wife is one of nine. And with all of her brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews, there's about 50 people. We live 12 miles from her mom and dad, and we were the farthest of the 50 away. So, you know, these big decisions in life, you're supposed to schedule time with your spouse, right? You're supposed to. So like on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, Gina and I sat down to have the discussion, was the Smirk family moving to Indianapolis? At 9:01, the decision was made that it wasn't moving. We weren't moving. And I describe it more as a monologue as opposed to a true dialogue.
I understand.
Yeah. So then, you know, I started the business and we've been very fortunate that we've been in existence now for 23 years almost, and we've been able to keep the lights on. So I will work with universities and institutions either doing investigations for them or doing compliance reviews for them. For example, we have the ACC contract. Well, I will go to every ACC school once every 3 or 4 years and look at their compliance systems.
Oh.
Do the same thing for the Big 12. And then so we do those, and then a school could call me. There's a couple schools in the Pac-12, a couple schools in the Big 10 that we'll go into about every 2 to 3, 4 years and look at their systems. And then we do the investigations for the schools. It would be Louisville, for example. We've done stuff with them. So that's kind of what led me from this small town in Indiana to still being involved in intercollegiate athletics. So I've been very, very, very fortunate that athletics has got me to the point where I could make it a career, even though I was going a totally different route at one point.
See what happens when you listen to your wife?
That's right.
Can't go wrong.
That's right.
Mama's happy.
That's right. That is true. That is true. So that's a little bit of a background on how we got to the point where now we advise schools, and we do advise schools on name, image, and likeness now, although that is, there's so few parameters with that it's hard to give a school a definitive answer on what they should do.
Okay. Well, let's start with the transfer portal. When did that start? I mean, the old rule was you could transfer, but you had to sit out a year before you could play again. And my understanding is now if you put your name into this transfer portal, any school can pick you up, offer you a scholarship, or not offer you a scholarship, just offer you an opportunity to play for them. And you don't have to sit out that year, but I think it's only a one-time affair. And those are some of the things that I don't understand. And I'm pretty much a college basketball fan. So maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the transfer portal, or the ability to transfer without sitting out, is one of the main pieces of a movement that has been in existence for a while. 10, 15 years ago, athletes had little involvement in the NCAA governance process. And over the years, they've gotten more opportunity for input, but there was still the athletics as business. And as we know, there's a lot of money in intercollegiate athletics. And the idea was, well, the athletes aren't getting anything. The athletes are putting people in the seats. They're not getting anything. It's not fair. That's not a new argument at all. But over the past 5-10 years, that's gotten more steam, if you will. Mm-hmm. So the idea was, how can the athletes get more benefits? How can they get more advantages? And one of the first things that came about that most people don't realize was with Division I basketball, if you were an athlete and your team competed, they would pay for transportation for the parents to come to tournament games. Mm-hmm. And that was started, again, 6-7 years as an idea of we need to give athletes more for what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But the dichotomy was always women's sports versus men's sports. So if you do something for men's sports, you have to do it for women's. Can you do it for basketball but not for fencing? For example, mm-hmm. And the idea, well, no, we have to watch that. And that's why it opened, if you will, in men's basketball, giving benefits to events, because then it was just a little, it was more permissible, if you will. Anyway, so they started thinking about transfers. One of the rules that opened it up, another way it opened it up, was if an athlete wanted to transfer to be closer to home due to a significant situation in life. My mother is dying. Okay, so that was those were waivers. We got involved. We wrote some of those waivers for schools so where the athlete could transfer closer to home. And then it got a little silly because then it was, well, it's 100 miles. Is that closer to home? Well, then they thought, well, let's not get too rigid on that. So it opened up. Waivers started being very prevalent. So then that opened it up more. And then with the movement of let's give athletes more movement because coaches can move right away and they don't have to do that. Yeah. So why is the athlete disadvantaged when the coach is not?
Yeah.
So it was a combination of several things, including more benefits to athletes. And within the transfer portal, and it all came together, and that was about 3 or 4 years ago, but it was incrementally implemented to where it is today. Now, going to your question about you can get a one-time transfer, but again, there's exemptions to that, to the point where it's opened up pretty much. And as you see, some athletes now are going to 3 or 4 schools during their career. And if you, for example, if you graduate, then you can get a transfer there.
Yeah.
Because you've graduated. You're being rewarded for finishing an undergrad program and you can be a graduate transfer. So between the legislation, the exemptions, and the graduate rule, you can get 3 or 4 schools if you really wanted, which there's a lot of disadvantages and advantages to that. We can talk about that.
Well, that's really interesting because I have heard, you know, just watching some of the college games this year, and they'll say, well, this guy started at Pepperdine, and then he transferred to Vegas. And then after Vegas, now he's here in the SEC. He's playing for Mississippi. And you're going, no, wait a second. How can he do that? He hasn't even graduated yet from college. You know, and then the other guys on the graduate transfer, you know, I know that's been pretty prevalent for the last few years. And it's really been a bonus for the top teams, I think. You see the guys that have, with COVID, 4 years of experience get to play a fifth year. They graduated and they go to programs. And like last year, North Carolina had a kid out of Oklahoma. You know, and he was a really good player at Oklahoma for 4 years, started as a freshman, I think. And he ends up going to North Carolina and playing in a national championship game as a graduate student. So I know that program has been extremely beneficial for some schools. So what you're saying right now is if somebody put their name into the portal, they're a freshman. They play it as a small major or mid major. They have a really good year as a freshman, put their name in the portal. They transfer to another school and maybe there's a coaching change or whatever, and they really don't like it there. Can they put their name into the portal again and then move forward?
Yes. Yep. Wow. And so you'll have it, and it's affected recruiting significantly.
Oh, yeah.
In the sense that we just had the football signing recently. Yeah. And whereas before, a football program might sign 30, 25 or so, of which 20 are high school and 3 or 4 would be two-year transfers. And maybe you'd have 1 or 2 4-year transfers.
Yeah.
Now you may only have 15 high schools. High school. So your true incoming freshman is reduced at the majority of your Power 5 FBS schools.
Wow.
Why? Because you've seen what the athlete can do on the collegiate level. Why take a chance with a high school kid if you know this person has performed successfully? Yeah. So if, you know, FBS are the Power 5, and you got the FCSs, which we all would know as the 1AA schools. So you see the 1AA schools are the breeding ground, are the pool for the FBS schools to get their talent pool. So the rich get richer in the sense of it's a pecking order, it's a hierarchy. And then some of the FCS schools then may go down to look at Division II schools or other FCS schools where there is a coaching change or whatever.
Yeah, I've got a grandson that's playing at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York, which is, I think they're considered a mid-major. Mm-hmm. And they did exactly what you just said. They went down into Division II NCAA basketball and picked up a 6'11 kid who's averaging about 20 points a game for him. And he's a really nice player, but he had been at Division II and had done extremely well there, obviously.
Yeah.
And he put his name in the portal, even though he was not Division I, put his name in the portal, got picked up by Division I, is being extremely successful where he is. So that's interesting. Now, are all sports involved in this, or is it just football and basketball?
All sports.
All sports. Okay. And is there that much activity in the other sports? I don't know if you know that.
No, there is not.
Yeah.
There's not. I thought it was like 30 to 40. I think it's 35 to 45% of all Division I basketball players now are going to transfer. So almost half of your incoming class eventually will not be there. And I think it's even going to get to be more of that at some point. And
yeah.
A lot of people aren't staying for 4 years,
right?
Because they're going to go to the pros or whatever.
Right.
And then a lot of people are just transferring. So your class, you're constantly recruiting. You're almost recruiting more each year than you have, but you're recruiting. You know what that person can do and how
right.
they can maybe fit into your team. So.
Right.
For football coaches, there are at least on most staffs, 2 or 3 people that are their main job, their primary job, is looking at the portal every day.
Interesting. having been a college basketball coach, I just think, you know, what would I have done back then had I been able to recruit from other schools and bring in players like that instead of having to go after the high school kids? To me, it'd be a really hard situation to be a NCAA Division I college basketball coach now, because if you have a really good player, chances are he's going to move unless he just really loves the program that he's in, to create what I call, I think there could be, and we'll talk about this when we talk about the NIL in a minute, but I think there could be locker room issues if you don't have a group of guys that come in and kind of bond together and become a team, you know. And that's been the successful teams in the past. Most of them haven't been the one and dones. It's been the guys that have seniors and juniors, and they'll win national championships because they have seniors and juniors that play together for 3 or 4 years. But I think it'd really be difficult now to be a head coach because you're going to lose your team. Every year you're putting a new team together again.
I haven't seen any studies, if you will, on that, but I would think cohesiveness, team cohesiveness, has decreased significantly because, again, you have, there's new people coming in all the time. And, you know, you're worried about people leaving. And you've seen, like, for example, this Clemson quarterback, he started just about all the games. He got benched toward the end of the year there, and now he's transferring. Are your coaching decisions based on, I don't want to upset this guy because he's going to transfer?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really a challenge for a coach now. And as you say, the cohesiveness has been so important in the past. And I think it's still going to be important going forward in order to win championships. You have to have that cohesiveness. But how do you create it? There's a new skill set now that's going to be needed by basketball coaching staff, football coaching staffs, and that type of thing.
What they've done now to eliminate some of the year-round recruiting, if you will, for the transfers is they have transfer windows when you declare. You can only declare now, I think it's 3 periods or 2 periods. You have about a total of 6 to 8 weeks that you can, during these periods, when you can declare. You put yourself in the portal. In essence, the portal gets closed until this period opens up, and then it closes again and opens up again. That starts, I think it starts this fall. It's going to be implemented this upcoming year.
Interesting. How about the recruiting side of this? Can a coach contact a player from another school before he puts his name in the portal?
No. Are contacts made? Yes. But the legislation says no. And we've gotten actually some business out of that scenario where the NCAA contacts a school and says, you've contacted this individual before he was in the portal. Well, most of the time, coaches aren't going to do that. If I'm the athlete, I'm going to have my AAU coach call. And the AAU coach calls the assistant coach at school X and says, I have a 6'8 guy whose number was 32, you know, or, you know, he's 6'8 and I know him very well. He played for me. Well, everybody knows who you're talking about, but no name is mentioned. Would you be interested in him? Oh, I know coach is always interested in good 6'8 players.
Yeah.
So, and you've seen some of these transfers who put their name in the portal, and then 10 minutes later, they declare they're going to school X. Well, you know, has there been contact between that school and that athlete? No. Or even the parent? No. But there's been back channels of all these conversations have occurred, but a school keeps itself clean enough. Because the NCAA, again, we've been involved in these cases, the NCAA is going to request that coach's phone. And they're going to say, we want that coach's phone because we're going to do an analysis of that phone, of all phone calls, texts, or whatever.
Okay.
And they'll get it, and they'll look for calls between parents or that athlete and the coach. Now, they may find a call between the AAU coach, but that's okay. I mean, as long as it's not talking specifically, it's okay. So the way it is now, back channels occur all the time, but it's still within the legislation. I don't think the NCAA is going to change that. I think it's just the way it's done. And they'll do these windows to try to keep to control a little bit more.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we're take a short break here in a minute, but before we do, is there anything else on the transfer portal that maybe our audience would be interested in knowing?
No, it's just going to be, especially for men's basketball, it's just going to be the way it is. And if you have three or four in men's basketball, that's 30, 40, 50% of your, 30, 40% of your team. If you have 10, 15 in football, it's a little less percentage, but you're still going to see that number increasing over the years. And personally, I don't think it's a good thing for the sport, but who's going to say, wait a minute, athletes shouldn't get that advantage, shouldn't get that privilege of what coaches can do? So
yeah,
nobody's going to lead the charge to say this is not right because it's hurting the sport, because the answer is, why are you disadvantaging the athlete who is bringing the people into the stands?
Well, that's great. Before we get into the NIL, let's take a short break. And when we come back, we can talk about name, image, and likeness, because it kind of goes hand in hand with the transfer portal with a lot of these athletes. And you can tell us what some of the pitfalls are, in both from the athlete side and from this institution side of that. So if you don't mind, we'll take a short break and come right back.